Today we have, I have guests. It's Justine Hoff, who is a mother and a therapist and an altogether wonderful friend, one of my coaching clients, one of my clients for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So watch out, she'll break your arms. And I have with me Krista Simons, who is an amazing wife, mom, entrepreneur, coach, and just a mentor altogether, a mentor to me in my life. And I'm so thankful to have you both on. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. So it is currently 9:42 in the morning. Thank you for being willing to show up. Today, our topic is unapologetically you. For me, it means something really positive, but there are a lot of people out there where it's just like a pretty negative kind of connotation. What does it mean to be unapologetically me? Who am I? That was the first question that came to mind. This has to do with identity. How can you say that you are unapologetically something or even authentically? And you see those being used kind of together, right? All over social media. Shine, be you, be authentic, be unapologetic. You should own all of those strengths that you have, all of your superpowers and all of that stuff. And you should go shine and do all that unapologetically. However, not all of who we are is great. And that's okay. So what if that also meant I'm being unapologetically me to myself? What if it's not just about how the world views you, but also how do you view you?
So as you were introducing, I was thinking about the fact that as I show up as myself, I used to show up and I didn't even know it, but I used to show up and apologize for everything. And I know this isn't exactly about unapologetically isn't just about apologizing, but the literal connotation of that, I didn't even realize that saying, you know, just saying, oh, I didn't do my makeup today. All those things are really apologizing for what you look like without saying I'm sorry. And I didn't realize that I did that all the time. I would apologize for at a restaurant, ask, I'm sorry, can you hand me the salt? Or, you know, I'm sorry, can you
yes.
do another thing of salsa or, you know, and I was, went to lunch with my dad many years ago when I was in college. And I said something like that to the server. And my dad said, why are you apologizing for asking for, you know, ketchup or whatever it was. And at that moment stuck with me. I've gotten so much better at not saying I'm sorry when I'm not sorry.
Have you ever noticed that, like, you're walking down the street and you're like just normal, taking the space that you need to take. You're just walking down the street, you're minding your own business, and somebody would walk real close past you and you're the one that's like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, excuse me. It's the same kind of thing. Oh, my bad. Why are you excusing yourself when someone else is the one that's coming into your personal space? And we've almost been taught this kind of like, that's polite behavior as a therapist and as a woman and as a mom and all of the things.
Coming from all the things. It makes me think of this book that I started reading. It's called Not Nice. And talk about this idea of throwing nice out the window, the kind of like the fallacy of politeness. And the author of this particular book, he was not a person of faith, but a lot of the principles that he talked about kind of relate to both, you know, secular mindset and just like from a psychology perspective, but also from a faith orientation of our goal as a good human should be to be kind. And to be kind, you must come up from an authentic place. Oftentimes being nice comes from fear. It comes from fear of other people's opinions, comes from fear of showing up and being disliked, being rejected, being not accepted. And how he expresses in his story, which a lot of people could relate to, I could totally relate to it, but he was coming from a man's perspective of just how he showed up and was like, he was always known as the nice guy, and how this was not successful for him in relationships and just emotionally. It took him to a really dark place, and he actually called it a cage of niceness. And if we tip that into looking from a faith perspective, you know, if we want to love other people. And this makes me also think of talks that Brene Brown gives. She's a social worker and does a lot of talk about shame. Is the most boundaried people are the most compassionate people. So there's something to be said about being authentic, having zero interest in being nice and, you know, kissing people's toes, as opposed to being okay if you step on them or if you take up space. I heard a talk another time by an Orthodox priest, and his wife is a psychologist. And one of the things that they encourage folks that they work with and their children is, we invite you to take space. Take space with us. When their children are going through something, or when they're having to sit down as a husband and wife, the invitation they extend is, please take space. That's with your thoughts. That's with your feelings, and even with your choices. And I know that's something I try to really emphasize with my kiddos, and I do boundary work a lot, all the time with my clients. And that's really what it boils down to, is you are responsible for whatever falls under your skin. That's your thoughts, that's your feelings, that's your choices. And no one can make you do or make those into anything. It comes from inside of you, and that's empowering as well. So really owning that and knowing that that's a good thing. That's a good thing, and be mindful how you manage that.
Yes, yes, yes. So that taking up space, let's talk about that a little bit. This is a phrase that I've been hearing popping up on a lot of things lately, social media, TV shows even. And you hear people talking about taking up space. So what would your definition of that look like?
I would say it's really owning those things that fall under your boundaries. Your boundaries define your property. The best way to think about boundaries is the fence around a house. It would be weird if your neighbor hopped your fence and started planting a tree in your yard. You're either, you know, depending on where you live, you're going to either get a shotgun or call the police or somewhere in the middle. Okay. Because that belongs to you. In the same way, you're not going to do that vice versa to your neighbor. So you're responsible for, and only responsible for, what falls in your property. That doesn't mean we're not responsible to other people, but as far as what we are held accountable for, you want to be mindful of those things, which are your thoughts, your feelings, your choices. So an example, like, hey, if you're sitting down with somebody and you're inviting them to take space, to fill out the edges of yourself, and I'm welcome that, that's still a call for that person, for you to be mindful that you're not crossing lines and being inappropriate and crossing maybe another person's boundary, right? So you don't get to violate the rights of others. You don't get to scream and yell at somebody. You don't get to whack them or hit them or behave inappropriately because you're having a hard time. It's owning, I'm struggling, or I'm hurt. I'm scared. I'm owning my feelings. This is where my mind is going. For couples, this could look like, gosh, like when you do this, this is what goes through my head. And this is what I feel. Like, that's really important to articulate that, to own that and to articulate that. And then owning our choices as well, whether it's, I'm going to, you know, facilitate or initiate a sit down talk with somebody because I'm interested in working on our relationship and having a conversation with you. That's also a form of taking space, because you are taking a step to, hey, I'm inviting you to commune with me, to have a discussion where I share with you what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, what I want to do, what I have done, or, something that I need your help with, if that makes sense.
Yes, so good. Yeah. Krista, what would it mean for you to take up space?
For me, taking up space is being present and being invited into a space or invited into a conversation that really resonates. I think that taking up space is just being who you are and being present and available for information to come in and available to share what's on your heart or in your mind, and not having pretense, not coming into a conversation with all these thoughts and the things that you're going to say, or if this happens, then I'm going to do this. And it just is such a welcoming way to say, be with me.
You know? A lot of times people think like, oh, I'm taking up all the space. And it's like, wait. No, like, I like what you said there. It's like, come with me. And Justine was saying, like, commune with me, and we're going to fill this space and do something that's meaningful. And that is actually really powerful, because a lot of times, and especially when we talk about social media, we're showing a small portion, a very small portion of who we actually are. And is that authentic? What if we showed up unapologetically as who we were, even owning the stuff that wasn't super pretty? I've been told a lot in the past, like, you talk too much about all your private stuff. It's too much. Like, be honest and be yourself, but also, like, that's too much. That's a little too much info. Maybe we should keep that private. That should be family matter. And I always was like fighting against that, because I'm like, wait a minute, like, secrets and all that, that happen behind doors, that stuff that has to be family matter only, that stuff that has to be super quiet, that stuff is the thing that really holds a lot of people back and holds people down into a pit of depression and sorrow and isolation. I know what it feels like to be isolated. So I'm going to take up space unapologetically as all of me, even the fact that I have PTSD, anxiety. I was traumatized as a child. I had a very traumatic past. I had a lot of abuse go on. All these things happen. I'm going to show that. I'm not going to hide that and only show you a smile. If I'm not your cup of tea, that's fine. You can keep scrolling. You can keep walking. You can leave the conversation. And like Justine was saying, like, you're owning this right here. I don't need to own your feelings about me. I don't need to own your idea that you have in your head about me. I'm only going to own me. So if I make you uncomfortable, you have the freedom to say, this is making me really uncomfortable. And I can respect your boundary and say, wow, I don't want to trigger you. I don't want to make you uncomfortable. I won't have that conversation with you. But I'm not going to apologize for having the conversation and saying the things that I have in my heart that I really need to say. I'm going to show up unapologetically as me, but I'm also going to respect boundary. But like self-care, self-love, self-protection, all of those things, they all fall into this space right here where we need to learn how to not apologize for who we are and also say the thing we need to say out loud without that inner voice saying, oh, you should keep that quiet. Look, abuses and terrible things happen in private, in the dark. And typically we see people who are controlling manipulators or abusers want to keep that in the dark. And so they will say things like, that is a private matter. That is a family matter. You shouldn't talk about that. We don't want to expose that. We don't want to expose that. Why? Because all the dark things want to stay in the dark because they don't want the exposure. They're showing this itty bitty piece of who they are. They're not showing all of who they are and what they do. Right. And I'm not saying we need to put on blast every bad thing. Like, we all have good parts of us and we all have bad parts of us. But be honest about what you're going through. People need to hear that thing. People need to hear that you struggle in motherhood. People need to hear that you struggle in marriage. People need to hear that you've had gone through abuses or traumas. People need to hear that you struggle with dyslexia, or, you know, you have health issues, or people need to hear those things, because when isolation happens, right, when we are isolated and we truly believe that we are alone in our circumstances, man, what happens next when you're in that pit? It can really get dark. It can really go bad really quickly. And it's unfortunate when we see people who, and we've seen a lot of this lately, especially in social media and news, is that a lot of people choose that they cannot continue that battle. They can't continue the battle of isolation anymore in their own mind and in their own space, in their own property, in their body. And so they're ending their life. And this is so heartbreaking to me. To think, man, if that person would have known that they just were not alone, what might have happened had they reached out for some help? So if we want to speak on that for a few moments, start with Krista, since you're up.
One of what first came to mind is, you know, showing that itty bitty space that we're talking about, or that you mentioned, that's, you know, typically social media, what people want you to see. And they want you to see the perfection, or sometimes it's like they only show up when there's something totally tragic and dramatic happening, and they shout that out, and then you don't hear from them for a couple months. And it's highly likely that they need attention. They do need, you know, there's more to that, right? But that's not the way to handle it, but that's how they're handling it, right? And so the way people show up on social media or not, or what they do show, is very telling of who they are too. You know, that is, if they're not showing anything except for the perfect house with the perfect kids and everybody's dressed, you know, in matching outfits and, you know, whatever that looks like, right? Keeping up with the Joneses, as they say. And it does, it looks nice, but there are, that does tell a story all in itself, right? We know like life cannot be perfect all the time. So that's where they are in their journey, right? And when people show up and talk about, like you said, dyslexia, talk about, you know, struggles, talk about things that are going on in their life, real things, and we are more vocal about it, that is slowly giving permission to those people to see that they could be more, but they have to get to a place where they could be comfortable. If they ever do, it might not, I mean, social media isn't always, you know, the answer, but to talk to the people that are affecting them, or get help when you talk about a 12-step program, get help when you talk about resources for homeschooling or dyslexia, or like, those are all things that I, that influence my life. And so those are things that I talk about on social media, but I don't, you know, they're parts of the story that are not mine to tell. And so I have to weigh those things right. as well.
Like, we're not airing the dirty laundry in every detail.
Right. Right.
But I'll hang up some of that laundry on the line so that you see that you're not the only person who has to do laundry every day.
Yeah.
We all got to do laundry and fold the laundry, put the laundry away. And sometimes like, hey, we don't. Like, I honestly, right behind me, have like a big thing of laundry that just doesn't go away. It doesn't matter what I do. Yeah. It doesn't go away, guys. It doesn't go
and away. And sometimes it gets all mildewy because we never switch it, you know, and then you have to wash it again.
It, that happens to you too, Krista? Oh my gosh. What about you, Justine? Does that happen at your house also?
Like, 100%.
Sometimes you forget. Yeah. Like, look.
Those towels.
The analogy for life though, guys, like, I hope everyone listening hears me on this. Dirty laundry. Mm-hmm. I don't need to tell you exactly what article of clothing is soiled in what way, okay? Mm-hmm. Or how long it's been in the hamper. But I am going to show you that I have to do laundry every day and it doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. Like, this is life. Look, we all do life every single day, and life is hard. Honestly, it's more difficult most days than it is easy or fun or fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I get it. A lot of people use social media to just like put like, hey, this is just for my family, and I'm just showing like the fun things so that we can keep in touch. That's great. Mm-hmm. If that's the way that you use social media, that is great. Not everyone has to talk about all these things, but look, how much more powerful is it when people do realize that you're not just all fun and Disneyland trips in Hawaii and but all the you know, matching outfits and going to church together. Like, what if you also threw in there every now and then that, man, I'm just like, you don't even have to put a picture up. Like, I'm just kind of struggling today with, you know, that I can't get dinner ready on time. Like, it just every single day, no matter what I do, we eat dinner late. And sometimes I have to just order out. I'm not cooking a 4-course meal every night because that's just life, right? Sometimes my kids eat from a box.
Eating out of a box. No, that was good. You're on a roll. Let's see. You know, it makes me think of, you know, where I've evolved in my social media followings is, I follow messy moms, to be honest with you. I can't perfectly relate to all of them, but by and large though, I understand them and I see them and I admire them. I've come to find in many ways because they do bear very vulnerable things. And I'm like, yeah, me too. But I'm like, I'm not telling anybody that I struggle with them. If you want to, and that a lot of my couples that I work with, I mostly couples, they have this persona that everybody else sees. They're wealthy, successful. They've got this great marriage. They've got this great family. They're doing all the trips. They're doing all these things. But I see all the brokenness and I see the tears and I see, like, you know, two children that are hurting each other.
Yeah.
And nobody else knows this is going on. Nobody else knows. So they're living in this glass bubble. And so that is my encouragement to them. And I would say, you know, to everyone is you need, there's different degrees of where you ought to be having accountability. So there's things like I'll be forthright with my clients to a degree. We call that appropriate disclosure that helps them relate to me as a human. And then there's also going to be things that that's not for you to carry. That's not for you to bear, but this is something I will talk to Becca about in my coaching, or this is something I'm going to talk to my mom about, but I might not talk about over here or vice versa. Like, so those things don't all have to, anything that's like locked in the vault that no one sees, I would say that should be some warning flags, because not everything should just be thrown out from the vault to everybody, but there's degrees of accountability, vulnerability that you want to have. And I think that's the little clincher. A lot of times I think when things get a little bit weird is people are just throwing out all this stuff to everybody and everyone's like getting splattered and they're like, oh, okay, what do I do with that?
Yeah.
Also just contribute that a lot of people who come from broken situations tend to be oversharers, and they don't have that boundary of what is appropriate and what isn't.
It also depends on your degree of healing. What you may share and to whom can also vary dependent on how healed you are. If you are actively bleeding, or if you have not healed from this stuff, even from however long ago it happened, it's still raw. And years down the road, you are healed and recovered, done your whatever therapies need to be recovered. What a powerful story to share that. There was once a time where I was bleeding on a plane and I was stabbed and I had to get myself help. That leads to my second point of be vulnerable about the good things too. And there's also degrees of how you share that. I remember hearing of a really successful leader, and he said, it's so hard to, you'll often find people who want to be empathetic with you and want to pray with you and see your wounds. But it's really hard to find good friends who want to rejoice with your successes. And those are just as important to find. And if you have gone through hellfire, if you have gone through these things, and if you've come through and things, you know, there are, like you said, life is not all bad, thank God, you know, and like for you, Becca, you are in this beautiful place and you're still real and raw about the things you struggle with and stuff like that. But look how far you've come and look at the things you get to do now. And it's so good that you show that side as well. Because that's also impactful. And I would also say that gives hope, right? Yes. I follow these broken mommies, but why I follow them is they also show, you know, there's still joy in their life. There's still things that they're doing. They're thankful. They're weeping and with pain, and they're weeping with joy. And that is life. You know, it's unbelievably broken here, but there's such unbelievable beauty and hope that's also available. So that would be my conclusion.
Yes, that's the whole mess to message, right? Mm. Mm-hmm. It's so much more powerful when there's a mess that becomes a message. We share, I'm not there anymore, guys. And it's beautiful, and it brings that hope, because for the person who does feel isolated, who feels like this is never going to end, there is no hope. For that person to see someone who's like, that was me. Are we surrounding ourselves with people, or at least one person who knows us so well that they could gently, lovingly correct, and even sometimes not so gently correct when we're in the wrong, because let's be authentic then, we are in the wrong at times. You're never 100% right.
So many people are operating from a place of fear and operating from a place of comparison constantly, right? And most of us were compared by our parents. Our parents did the best they could with what they had, right? Which sometimes is very little. Sometimes it's very little that they had. But they're a product of their situation. It just, like, we have to be the cycle breakers, right?
And we need each other. And this is what it really boils down to. Having this whole talk, right, about unapologetically me, what it really boils down to is, who are you? If you don't know who you are, you cannot show up unapologetically as you. So as we show up unapologetically, we have to also accept those pieces of us and give room and give space to who we're becoming. I don't want to stay the same person forever. Thank God I'm not the same as I was when I was 19. Thank goodness I'm not the same person I was when I was 20 or 30. Allowing people to help sharpen you as such a part of that journey. That is authenticity. That is unapologetic.
Yep. And being open to receiving that, being humble and, you know, having the humility to be open to hear what other people want to contribute to.
Get the knowledge, get the good stuff, but know when to spit out the bones, know when to throw out the stuff that you don't need.
Keep going and keep growing. I just really like that messaging that you're sharing, letting in the good and letting in the light and knowing yourself well enough to not take in the junk.
Yes. All right. Thank you all for listening. This has been an amazing episode. Episode number 5 of Growing with Becca, where I hope to always have thought-provoking conversations that promote growth in health and life. As always, until next time, keep going and keep growing.